Okay, we are. All right, so ground roots. As Scott said, the questions were submitted directly to Susan and I, and it was from a really broad spectrum. And let me assure you, I've already had this question 4 times today. No, we have not shared it with anybody. No one, not even Scott, because we didn't finish going through the questions until 2:30 this morning. So, each candidate will have a 3-minute introduction. Each candidate will be asked the same question and have 2 minutes to respond to each question. Due to time constraints, there's not going to be any questions accepted from the audience. There's not going to be a lightning round. In other words, we're not going to do just simple yes or no questions so that you get a chance to actually hear what it is that they think. And each candidate will give a 5-minute closing. At the beginning of this, both candidates have drawn for their position, and we will alternate back and forth between the opening, the closing, and each question. So when you get the mic and you finish answering a question, keep it if you're the second person, because you're going to be the first person on the next question. Okay? All right. Are we ready to go?
Yes.
Woo! All right, guys. I want to hear something here. All right. I'm going to turn the mic over. Susan is going to start with the first question. Oh, that's right. Dadgummit. Okay. So, Mike Alcock, would you please come up and get a 3-minute opening? We have a timekeeper before you start, Mike. Rachel Horton is the timekeeper.
So
she's
going
to be telling you, right? All right, thanks so much.
That is how much time is remaining, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to start by thanking you all for showing up tonight. I want to thank Scott Utley for organizing this event, and Lucas Turner for such an awesome prayer. I think it was very appropriate. So anyway, my name is Mike Alcott. I'm running to be your next state representative in House District 60, a new district for us. First of all, I'd like to just let you know that the most important relationship in my life is my relationship with my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. The second most important relationship in my life is with my wife, Marika, who's been a rock through this whole adventure over the last 6 or 7 months, and I love her to death. She's the love of my life. So I thought I would actually, since there's just 3 minutes, I wanted to share with you, and some of you may have heard this before, but it's kind of the event that kind of transformed my life to take me from a nerdy biochemist to a conservative activist standing here in the political arena. So back in April of 2005, or actually maybe March of 2005, I was moving my wife down to Florida where she was starting a postdoc. And I was watching Bill O'Reilly, and there was something that came on, and they said there's going to be a border watch for civilians down in the Arizona border. And so, and it was down near Tombstone. We were meeting in Tombstone on April 1st, 2005, and I said, this is something I got to do. I just read Michelle Malkin's book, Invasion, so I decided to do it. And I took a month off from work, and after dropping her off in Florida, I rushed back and got to Tombstone, and spent about 25 days out of the 30 days they were down there, and it really changed my life, not maybe overnight, but what happened was, not only did I see firsthand what was happening at the border, we basically paired up every quarter mile with someone else. And for 22 miles, if we saw someone, we would call our supervisor, many of them Vietnam vets, then they would call Border Patrol and they would come arrest them. But in essence, in April 2005, 878 American citizens shut down 22 miles of border in Arizona. And that was really, that was my first taste of conservative activism. And it's something that I was very proud of, and I felt like I was doing something. But what really, the most important event was not necessarily that, it was the people that I met. I met some of the most amazing people in my life, and many of them are still my friends. Retired Marines, FBI agents, physicians, surgeons, a lot of blue-collar workers, even the head of the guidance system for the Apollo missions, who's since passed away. But anyway, I would go back to where I was doing research at Oregon State University, and I was surrounded by professors that hate this country, and they detest capitalism. And up to that point, I've been tolerated simply because we had a common shared love for science. But I got to a point after a while that I didn't want to be with them. I wanted to be around people that love this country. So I was blessed that I could afford to retire. I moved back to Texas, got involved with the Republican Party, the Tea Party, and became a conservative activist. Moved to Parker County in 2012, became a precinct chair in 2014. I got elected to the State Republican Executive Committee for Senate District 30 in 2015. And then in Also in 2015, my wife and I co-founded Parker County Conservatives, and I'm out of time, and so that I just wanted to give you that little background to kind of see how that whole process works. So thank you for...
Good evening, I'm Glenn Rogers. I'm a Christian father and grandfather, husband, veterinarian, rancher, conservative Republican in the state House of Representatives. I want to recognize my wife here, Mandy, my son Ben, my daughter Leah, and they've been with me through this journey, and it, as many of you can imagine, is tough on families, probably more than me. My first session in the Texas House was the fourth longest in Texas history and the most conservative session in Texas history. We passed the heartbeat bill, the trigger bill, which will automatically allow Texas to return to pre-Roe v. Wade status once Roe v. Wade is overturned. We also passed $150 million for alternatives to abortion. We passed constitutional carry, made Texas a sanctuary state for the Second Amendment, and passed numerous other pro-Second Amendment legislation. We appropriated almost $3 billion for increased border security, passed election integrity, bail reform, preventing local officials from closing houses of worship, banned the teaching of critical race theory, and banned biological males in women's sports. I fulfilled my campaign promises to support public education, business development, and access to health care. As a member of the Pensions, Investments, and Financial Services Committee, I carried a governor priority bill, a 13th check for retired educators, which provided a one-time supplemental payment of up to $2,400. As the only freshman of the Transportation Committee, I developed key relationships and obtained extensive knowledge about transportation issues and how to help facilitate improvement of our roadways in one of the fastest growing areas in Texas. So education, transportation, and water are key areas that me and my staff are already working on daily for Parker County, District 60. My staff and I will continue to work to be active in the community and constantly assess local needs. We will work for the district, not for a few extremists that seek to control through division and chaos, but we'll represent the people that really matter, which is you and your families. Thank you.
Yeah, if we can keep any kind of chatter from the audience and let us just continue to move forward with the questions, please.
Thank you, Glenn. Your question is you're the first one to answer this question. Incidentally, they're both getting the same question. They're just going to alternate who answers it first and second. So the first question is, what are your top three priorities coming into the 2023 legislative session?
My top three priorities are lowering property taxes, securing the border, and public education. Those are my three top priorities. In terms of border security, as I mentioned earlier, we passed almost $3 billion to help secure the border. We still have a lot of work to do. We have to win the Senate and the House and try to defuse some of the craziness in Washington, right? But that's the U.S. government's responsibility, but we're trying to fill in the gap, and I applaud what Governor Abbott has done. I like sending people to Washington, D.C. to just show them what has been created on the border. In terms of public education, I'm a public education advocate. I believe as a conservative, that's my responsibility. Article 7, Section 1 of the Texas Constitution requires legislators to support public education to provide for free, efficient public schools. And I think I'm out of time. Okay, still have 30 seconds. So it's public education, the border, and property taxes. We'll talk more about property taxes. I think I'm gonna run out here, but we did pass two constitutional amendments that you just voted on that will lower your property taxes. It's not near what we wanted, but I joint offered a bill to take 90% of the budget surplus and use that to draw down property taxes. And that bill did not pass, but I expect it will come up again this next session. Thank you.
Yeah, my top three priorities, I think it's pretty obvious, considering what you just heard there, that my number one priority, and it has been since 2005, to do something about the border. And I can tell you, since I've been following illegal immigration and border security, I can promise you right here and now, the U.S. government is never going to secure that border. Texas is going to have to do it. And in my opinion, we have the legal rights to do it. Because there's a Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution gives the states the right, if the federal government fails to do it, that we can take matters in our own hand. And the key word is invasion. And pretty much everyone I talk to considers 6,000 people an invasion. And apparently, someone just told me the other day, the Attorney General from Arizona has ruled that it's an invasion. So I think that we have a legal right for Texas to simply take over where the federal government has failed. Second biggest issue, and it's been an issue I've been fighting since 2014, is the runaway property taxes. We don't need any more Band-Aids. We actually need real, meaningful property tax reform. And there's a really good plan put out there by the Texas Public Policy Foundation. I haven't read the whole plan in detail, but there's one key aspect that I really love about it, and that's actually taking advantage of a bill that just passed last session that capped state spending to inflation and population growth, and actually dedicated 100% of that revenue to buy down, most specifically, the maintenance and operation portion of property taxes. Now, the schools will still get the same amount of money. It's just going to be taken from money that otherwise might have been spent on something that wasn't important. But the third priority of mine is something that I'm very passionate about, and that is to ban this horrific practice of taking little children and allowing them to be transitioned. I think that's atrocious, and I can't believe it's happening in Texas. And we need to stop it once and for all. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mike. He gets the next question first. So, I know it's a little odd, and I'm sorry, but there's only two of you, so it's, like eeny, meeny, miny, moe. We know who's coming up next. So, Texas is expecting over $12 billion budget surplus in 2022. What do you feel would be the best use of this surplus? Something like returning the majority to the taxpayers, buying down the school portion of property taxes, or in your opinion, is there another avenue you would pursue, and why?
I think considering that so many people that I've talked to at the door over the last 5 years, that property taxes is such a huge issue, that they're just being burdened, I would support a bill that would dedicate 100% of the surplus revenue, as I just mentioned, to buy down property taxes. Now, just to let you know, this isn't something that's going to happen overnight. If the bill passes the way they've kind of imagined, it's going to take 8 to 10 years to actually potentially reduce your property taxes by 50%. But these little Band-Aids they keep doing every other year is basically just slowing down the rate of property tax growth. It's not actually giving you any relief to where you can actually afford to live in your home.
Rogers, do you want me to repeat the question?
No, that's fine. I got it. So the $12 billion, I would support using that to buy down property taxes. There's also $12 billion in the rainy day fund. We don't need to touch the rainy day fund. We just need to buy down property taxes with that surplus.
Question. The conversation regarding school choice has risen to the forefront and is likely to be a major issue in the larger education debate. Please explain your position on schools and your overall position on school choice.
I believe in school choice, which means I believe in public, private, homeschool, or a hybrid variation of that. I don't believe in diverting funds from the public schools to private schools. I don't believe in taxpayer-funded private schools. I think that's very problematic. In fact, I think you have to be careful what you ask for. Do you want these tax dollars, these taxpayer dollars going to, for instance, a Muslim school? How are you going to stop that? How are you going to stop the strings that go with any government money? I don't think anybody in private school would like the STAR test, for instance, to follow those funds. So I have a real problem with diverting our taxpayer dollars and moving that into private schools.
Question, the conversation regarding school choice has risen to the forefront and is likely to be a major issue in the larger education debate. Please explain your position on schools and your overall position on school choice.
Okay, thank you for the question. Yes, I do support school choice. I agree with 88% of the Republican primary voters in Parker County that just took this. I didn't have access to the other counties, but my guess is they are reasonably close to that. I was very happy to, because not only is it because 88% of the Republican primaries, but I truly believe that parents are the ultimate arbiters and decision makers of how best to educate their children. If there are, I mean, we actually have really good school districts in this House district, but there are school districts in this state that are failing, and they're failing the children, and the parents have a right to do something about that to make sure their kids get a quality education. If you've got kids in Travis County that are being indoctrinated with horrific sexual education stuff as early as third grade, I think that you have the right to move your children out of that school district. And the second thing, as far as the money, the vouchers, well, you did mention vouchers, but I was very happy to see that Governor Abbott just yesterday said that he believes very strongly in the same thing that proposition said in on our Republican March 1st ballot, is that the money should follow the child. Now, I do agree with Representative Rogers that I am concerned about strings, so I think that we have to be careful that the government does not get into private schools or doesn't get into homeschoolers. Of course, they have the option whether to do it or not. That's one thing to consider, but I do think that is one concern I have, but I'm happy to see that Ted Cruz, John Cornyn, Dan Patrick, and now Governor Abbott support the idea of the funds following the students. Thank you.
Just say, y'all are quick learners. Y'all are doing good at staying up there. Okay. Do you believe there should be more local control or control by local government entities such as local school boards or less, and why?
That's a very good question. I think it's actually kind of a tough question because ultimately, I think that when you're considering critical race theory and some of the other things and the sex ed taking place in some of these school districts, the best way to solve that is to get good Christian conservatives on the school board. That by far is the best solution. But here's what I'm concerned about. What do you do in Travis County and Austin? What are the chances of getting a Christian conservative elected to that school board? So that's the kind of dilemma I believe very strongly in local control is the most effective. But if I think it's just outrageous that we're in a lot of school districts, not here, but in a lot of school districts, we're indoctrinating little socialists, and we have to do something about that. And so there's a balance there, but I think that we have to do something to prevent indoctrination of our children, because I'm concerned that what's going to be the product of that? These are people that are future. And I'll tell you this, when I'm knocking doors and I see the parents, Republican, I see it all the time, the younger kids, they vote in Democrat primaries, Democrat primaries. That scares me to death. And where do you think they're getting that from? They're getting it from the schools. So I think we have to do something about that.
I believe in limited government, both federal and state, and local control. I think local control is a very conservative concept. But I don't believe in out of control. And out of control is what has occurred in Austin and some of these other school districts. So that is a problem. But we can't pass punitive measures that just because one school district is out of control locally that we punitively do something that's going to affect the great schools that we have here in Parker County and other areas. So yes, I'm a very big proponent of local control. I think we need to stop some of the mandates that are coming down education-wise that are putting really onerous, particularly on our smaller schools. We need to let our local leaders in these schools, these elected school board members, they need to have the ability to do to match the community standards that are there in the case of schools like Toledo and other small schools. But again, There's a difference between local control and out of control. Thanks.
Okay, securing the border has been the topic of conversation for years, and the phrase means different things to different people. What does securing the border look like to you, and what legislation would you file to help accomplish that goal?
Without a border, we're not really a sovereign nation. We have to have a border. I support the border wall. I support completing that border wall. As I mentioned earlier, we've already appropriated almost $3 billion for border security. We've increased DPS and Texas Army Guard presence there. So we need to continue doing what we're doing, certainly, and step that up. We've got to keep fighting to secure the border. It's not something that Texas can just pay for today. I mean, we can't afford to pay for the wall today. It's going to take time to do that, right? But I would certainly support legislation that would be supported by Governor Abbott to remedy the border. I think the issue, you know, when you talk about invasion, you know, that's a great political word to say invasion, but the invasion is really not Mexico. There's so many different people coming across that it's hard to say who is actually the invading party. So I don't think declaring it an invasion is going to do anything to change what Abbott is already doing. And so that's a real problem that I have. It's up to the federal government to protect our border. We've got to elect Republicans in the state or in the Senate and the House, and we've got to win this next election.
Before you start, guys, you need to make sure that you're being adults and being kind to the speaker. So please hold your chatter in the audience while they are speaking. Thank you.
So I'm going to have to very respectfully disagree with Representative Rogers on this. As I said earlier, the federal government is never going to do it. Under Article 4, Section 4, they're supposed to be doing it, but they're not doing it. And I can tell you this, it does come down to the word invasion, and 6,000 people a day, maybe soon 18,000 a day, is an invasion. And like I said, the Attorney General in Arizona, I think, has already ruled it's an invasion, is what someone told me. And so, This is not going to be solved by simply relying on the federal government, because they're not going to do it. I mean, Trump had the presidency, had the Republicans in control for 2 years. They wouldn't give him the money for the border wall. Okay, I was down there December 31st this past year in the Del Rio sector, and I saw with my own eyes what the $2.8 billion was doing at our border. And I applaud the efforts of the DPS and the State Guard, but all they're doing is babysitting. Basically, the illegal aliens walk across the river, walk up to the State Guard, and all they're doing is giving food and water. And this isn't their fault. These are their operational orders. Giving them food and water and saying, wait here until you're taken to a processing center, put on buses, and either taken to the airport where you're flown, but taxpayer money, wherever they want to go, or put on a Greyhound bus. And so that $2.8 billion might prevent, cut back a little bit on the crime down there, but I can promise you, I saw with my own eyes, it's doing nothing to deter illegal immigration. And the only way it's going to happen is if we declare it an invasion and put pressure on, and pass legislation to put our State Guard on the border to take matters in their own hand. And that's the only way it's going to be solved.
Rising property taxes are forcing many Texas homeowners, especially the elderly, to move out of their homes. What solutions would you propose to alleviate this problem?
Well, I think we've already kind of alluded to that. That's a good question, because it's happening. I remember one day, about 3 years ago, I was knocking doors in a neighborhood, this really long street, and I was there for another reason, but literally 10% of the people I talked to, maybe 100 people, 10 of them just out of the blue said, I can't live here anymore in my school district. I'm just being taxed out of my home. This is a big, big issue. And so I've already mentioned that there is a plan. I haven't read the whole thing in detail, but I love the idea of taking surplus revenue created by this new bill and and actually using it to buy down property taxes so that every year your property taxes will actually start going down, then hopefully, theoretically, in 8 to 10 years, our property taxes will be cut in half. Because it's, I think one of the most common things I'm hearing now, people are starting to wake up and realize, is that right now, we don't own our homes. You can pay off your mortgage and everything, but if you don't pay your property taxes, you're out of that house. You're renting it from the government, and that's wrong.
I think this may be a little repetitive, but again, we would certainly support drawing down property taxes with a surplus. Another thing that we would propose is to raise the homestead exemption even farther. You just voted on a constitutional amendment to raise it from $25,000 to $40,000. I would propose next session it should go to $80,000, even $100,000. So that will help. That will help the elderly somewhat, but it's a major problem. As I've block walked across the district, I've heard numerous people tell me that they are concerned about losing their home. And it's a great concern to me. It's something that we have to address when we get back to Austin. So again, draw down the property taxes, raise the homestead exemption, look for other solutions, and we'll certainly be doing that.
Okay, we're gonna move into something different now on infrastructure. What specific infrastructure needs would you address? I'm sorry, let me start over. What specific infrastructure needs would you work to address in Parker County? And how would you go about addressing them?
I'm currently a member of the Transportation Committee, which I think is very valuable for Parker County, one of the fastest growing areas in the state. And me and my staff are already having weekly meetings with TxDOT, city and county officials, and getting our heads around what are the problems and what can be done. We had our first transportation hearing, interim hearing, 2 weeks ago in Austin that I went down for. But in looking at some of the things that we could do for our roadways, one is the Bankhead Highway needs to be reconnected and taken over by the state, so we'll have another east-west thoroughfare. There's a number of things we need to do with safety, particularly on our infrastructure. We recently put together a meeting in Aledo between Union Pacific, the Aledo ISD, and city officials to address some of the safety concerns and just convenience concerns in Aledo. That's what we like to do. We have a great team, a great staff. We're already established. We know who to contact in Austin to get things done, and we're ready to go back and be even exponentially more productive with that background.
Yeah, great question, because I think with the way that Parker County, and I've been recently hearing the same thing in Palo and Stevens County, it's growing very quickly. And as everyone can tell, I got caught in it today. I mean, it probably cost me an extra 15 minutes to get here. The traffic's out of control. So infrastructure, that involves not just transportation, but water. I understand there's a problem with water out in Western Parker County. We have to address that. It's a serious issue. But I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on that. So if I get elected, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to try to set up some kind of roundtable in the different counties and bring together TxDOT along with the county commissioners, even school districts, city councils, and ask them what are the most pressing concerns, where are the roads that need to be taken care of. And then from that, and from learning from that, I could go back to Austin and try to fight to bring the needed funds to take care of not just the roads that are really real critical issue, but what can we do about water? And I've already, like Jim Martin apparently is an expert on water, I mean, because he's a developer. I mean, so sit down and talk with some of these developers that might have some ideas, what can we do to address the serious infrastructures that that are challenging Parker County in particular, but also Palo Pinto County. Thank you.
Actually going a lot faster. I'm not taking up all your time. That's weird for politicians, guys. I'm just saying. All right. With gas prices over $4 a gallon, Is there anything the Texas legislature can do to help Texas become energy independent?
Yeah, the first bill I'd like to pass is to take those little I did that stickers and make it mandatory to put them all on all the gas cars. I'm sorry, I distracted myself from the real question. What was it? Oh, to become more energy independent?
Yeah, what is there anything the Texas legislature can do to help Texas become energy independent?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, but I kind of feel like we probably could be if we wanted to be real easily, because we're exporting liquefied natural gas down at the coast. And my guess is we're probably exporting more oil than we're consuming here in Texas. I could be wrong about that. But with all the oil in Texas and natural gas in Texas, I see no problem Texas becoming independent. I'm not even so sure that's something that we need to do regulatory. I wonder, maybe you all know, is that a problem? Are we actually not energy independent here in Texas? Because I would think that we were. We've got a thriving oil and gas business here, and so I don't really know. Okay, you don't want me to ask them y'all's questions. So I don't know if that's actually, I feel like we're already energy independent. I mean, we should be. If we're not, we can be, because we've got enormous resources here in Texas. So, but if that is the case, that should be a real simple bill to pass. Thank you.
You know, Texas is a state, but if we were a nation, we would be the ninth largest economy in the world, and we're the greatest producer of oil and natural gas. You know, there's really no reason why we don't maintain that energy independence like we were in the Trump administration. That's been taken away by very poor policies by the Biden administration. I don't know exactly, I'd have to think about that, what we can do in the Texas legislature to make us energy independent, other than just continuing to support our oil and gas industries like we currently do. I think we could definitely continue to put pressure. You know, one of the things that I do as a state legislator is I have regular communication with my congressman, Roger Williams, August Pfluger, Jake Elsey, a number of those people. And we need to have that relationship. And this is something where we need some help on the federal level. So we have to work together on that as much as possible. And I think at least we could immediately, when we get back to Austin, pass a resolution that we send to the U.S. Congress demanding that we or go back to our energy independence like we had in the Trump administration.
Budget.
Well, as an Aggie, I was going to say the University of Texas. I just lost all my Longhorn votes. I was just kidding. But that's a good question. We have a Sunset Commission, which we need federally. But in Texas, we have a Sunset Commission that looks at every agency every 12 years, and they're looked at very closely. In almost every Sunset Commission that goes on, they're severe, or not always severe, but there are at least minor to moderate cuts made in those agencies. Sometimes the agencies are totally eliminated. In the U.S. government, we don't have a balanced budget like we do in Texas. We don't have a Sunset Commission like we do in the state. So we already have some good groundwork in place to make cuts, specific cuts in different agencies as the sunset time permits. One of the things that I want to do as I stay in the Texas House is be on the Sunset Commission. You have to be a legislator for usually several terms before you can get on that.
Texas Enterprise Fund. I would vote to eliminate that. I don't believe in governments being involved in, that's just not their role. I think what Texas can do and what they have been doing is create an environment where we have no income tax, we have lower regulations than most states, and we need to reduce the size of government and make it easier with less hassles for businesses to set up in Texas, and I can promise you they're coming. that you don't have to actually entice them and give them government money to bring them here. I can promise you that we have a wonderful state that actually creates a beautiful environment for business, and people know that, and I see no business the government being involved in subsidizing it. Thank you. Districts get away with it?
Yes.
No, I'm not supposed to ask you questions. I'm not aware of that, but I can promise you that if that's the case, we need to do everything possible to make sure that these obscene pornographic books in schools need to be removed. I will work tirelessly to make sure that doesn't. I didn't realize that that was what was allowing them to do it. We absolutely have to stop that. That's child abuse, and we have to stop it. No matter what.
We definitely need to stop that, no question. You know that I'm very pro public education, but that doesn't mean that I don't support improving our public schools, and where we find situations such as pornographic materials in libraries or inappropriate material for certain age groups, we need to get rid of that. I recently signed a letter with Jared Patterson that was related to the Frisco School District about eliminating some of the books that were in their library. You may have seen it. There were 26 of us, conservative Republicans, that signed that letter. I also signed a letter to the superintendent in Granbury, thanking him for the stand that he took in Granbury in their school library. So yes, we do need to drop that. Yes.
Can you use your microphone, please?
It doesn't matter.
Use his.
The Chapter 313 program, which allowed for economic incentives for business, was not renewed by the legislature this last session. Should this program be replaced, and if not, what would you do to encourage businesses to expand and or move to Texas?
Well, 313 is dead. And I used to be on the school board, and I think we saw some advantages in some situations for what 313 did to bring business into Texas. But I think those days are past. We have such a robust economy. I'm not sure that we certainly don't need 313 as it existed. Certainly, when we get back to the legislature, I'll be looking at some other alternatives for encouraging increased business growth into Texas. But I don't think we're having any problem with businesses coming into Texas right now.
Yeah, I'm delighted that it's the 313, those are the abatement rules that I am delighted that have been eliminated, and I don't really want to bring anything like that back, and I've already stated why. That's not the role of government. It's that simple.
Apparently, I don't talk loud enough. Okay. Given the current concern over curriculum and inappropriate books in the public schools, what do you think the proper role of the legislature, if any, is in addressing these issues and safeguarding parental rights?
So I think we're getting some overlap. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, the best solution is to have good school boards that would make sure that those don't end up in our libraries. But seeing how some of these school districts are going to continue to do it and ignore the values of this state, and now learning at this forum, there's actually some kind of obscenity rule that allows them to get away with it. Get back to that original question. We need to revisit that and make sure that they're not exempted from that. So that would be my solution.
Do you repeat the question?
Given the current concern over curriculum and inappropriate books in the public schools, what do you think is the proper role for the Texas legislature, if any, in addressing these issues and safeguarding parental rights?
Well, I helped support the bill to ban critical race theory, K through 12. We may need to address that and go a little bit even stronger next session. As I mentioned earlier, I signed on to a letter related to pornographic books that were appearing in schools recently. And certainly it's already been mentioned, but the school board is where this all happens. And I know probably many of you in the audience have served on school boards. It's a thankless job, but it's a very, very important job. And I think it's important that we elect conservatives to school boards that will look at this issue and make sure on a local level that we don't have inappropriate material in our schools.
With the cost of university degrees rising exponentially, and more teachers leaving the teaching profession, while fewer young people are pursuing the profession, would you support people being able to get a teaching certification from a community college? And please explain.
So are you talking about a two-year community college getting a teacher certification? I think when we look at what's happening in our public education system with losing teachers, and quite frankly, a lot of our teachers are demoralized. They're being criticized. They're being blamed for societal woes when really the root problem is what's going on in the home. And particularly public school teachers don't have an opportunity to pick and choose which students they take in. And so we have a shortage of teachers. We have a shortage of teachers for many reasons. COVID has been something that has just really affected the morale of our teachers, having to teach in those situations. So we may have to take some extraordinary measures. I don't know that I'm ready to allow teacher certification with just a two-year community college degree. But certainly, if this trend continues, we continue to lose teachers, then we may need to do that. But I just hope and pray that we'll begin to change this trend towards criticizing teachers for societal woes and try to get behind them and pray for them and run for school board and meet with us school boards, meet with our people that really support public education and get behind them and reverse this trend. That's a better thing than lowering the certification standards.
Yeah. Do you mind repeating the question?
With the cost of university degrees rising exponentially and more teachers leaving the teaching profession, while fewer young people are pursuing the profession, would you support people being able to get a teaching certification from a community college, and please explain?
Sure. I would have to know more about how well they'd be educated in the two-year community college. I mean, I have heard the same thing. I've talked to a number of teachers in this campaign, and one of the things I have heard is that the kids are becoming more and more unruly, and I would agree with Representative Rogers. It's likely a problem with the parents, not the teachers. And I feel for the teachers having to go through with that because they're not there to actually act as, you know, disciplinarians. Are there to teach, and it's sad that they're leaving in droves. I don't know if that's the right answer, but we definitely have to find a way to fill the ranks of teachers if that's become a real shortage. And if that's something, if someone could show me that they get an adequate education and a two-year degree in community college, that's something that I would definitely consider.
All right, so that brings us to the end of our prepared questions, and we are going to start with the closing remarks. Each of you get 5 minutes, and we will start with Representative Rogers.
I thought we were just getting started on questions, but... Well, I want to close by talking about what I think is unique about me. Certainly, we have similarities on our views. You've heard those. I have a little bit about me and my career. I'm a veterinarian. I'm a rancher. I've had a lot of experience in small business. I was a practitioner, rural practitioner, and I learned to run a small business and work 24/7 for the public. And then I spent a career as a university educator, where I learned to be an effective teacher and researcher. And then I spent time in the corporate world in the animal health business as a consultant. And in that case, I learned to connect rural communities with people in urban environments and explain kind of what really goes on out there in the real world. So when I decided to run for this office in the first campaign, it was really related to my desire to make sure that my children would grow up to have the same freedoms and economic opportunity that I had. And I also felt like there was underrepresentation in the district that I was in Texas. So that's why I decided to run. This session, I had a very productive session. I passed more bills than any freshman through the Texas House. I carried the 13 check that I mentioned earlier, and I had a very good conservative voting record, and I pointed out some of the bills that we co-authored and passed, the most conservative session in Texas history. But I now have the experience of being in Austin for a session. I know I don't look like a freshman, but I'm a freshman legislator. This is my first. I worked for 40 years as a veterinarian and a rancher, small business person. I'm not a career politician. I chose to do this because I felt led to serve. And I want to go back. And when I do go back, I'm going to take the experience that I gained in that first session. I'm going to take the network that I created and all the relationships that I've developed, and we're going to accomplish great things. We've already accomplished great things, but we're going to accomplish even more. You can't go down there and just throw bombs. You have to go down and work with people. And I'm really good at that. I'm good at working with people, maintaining my conservative ideals, but working with people for positive change. And that's what Parker County deserves. You don't want to send somebody to Austin that is just going to go down there and conduct ideological warfare and throw bombs. You want somebody that can go down there and represent you and accomplish what needs to be accomplished. You've had Phil King represent you for 22 years. You can't afford to send somebody down there without experience when you already have an experienced person to go down there and represent you. I appreciate your support, and I look forward to meeting any of you that I haven't had a chance to meet. God bless you.
So, I got to say that this was not something that I've been dreaming about doing, running for office. As a matter of fact, for the last 7 or 8 years, I've been really happy being a Republican precinct chair here in Parker County, getting out, getting to know voters and trying to make a difference, get good, true conservatives elected in the Republican primary. And, you know, along the way, I've been fighting for property tax reduction. I've had petitions that I've taken in front of school boards, and I've created some enemies, and some of them are in this room, simply because I went and asked that when the appraisal values go up 30%, how about giving us like a 2 cent reduction, you can still have another $8 million.
Yeah.
And basically they did this at me. And I am being crucified over in the Toledo area simply because I wanted to try to provide some of this extra money, millions and millions of dollars. Just give us 2 cent reduction, you still have $7 million extra dollars. And I created a lot of enemies. And so, you know, had I known I was gonna run for office, you know, maybe that would make it not such a smart thing to do, but I don't regret it 1 minute because I'm always going to fight for conservative principles. And I don't know where my opponent comes up with some of his ideas about being a bomb-throwing person. I mean, I really don't. I don't know where I've been a bomb thrower. I've been a fighter. That's true. One of the issues that he's been bringing up in some of the mailers that I'll bring up right now is funding. So I'm pretty sure this is a very educated crowd politically. I would encourage you, all of you, to go home tonight, go to the Texas Ethics Commission, and look and see who has donated to my campaign, who's donated to his campaign, but most importantly, who's donated to all these PACs that are exposing his liberal voting record. Because he's claiming and sent out a letter in his writing basically saying that I'm funding all these PACs. I haven't given a single penny to any PAC that has sent out a mail and exposed his voting record. And it's sad because I know he knows that's true. And yet he still does it. And I think that's a reflection of his character. In one of the last mailers, he claims that I owe $45,000 to City of Fort Worth. I don't even know where that comes from. So I had an attorney the last couple of days calling up and asking if I owe any $45,000. I called the tax assessor collector. I called the county clerk. I have no idea what he's talking about. Maybe there is something out there, but. And then I'm the one being accused of playing dirty. All I've done, and I want you to go back and look at the mailers, and you'll see that all I'm doing is exposing his voting record, okay? And so, in all honesty, I don't think that my opponent, his voting record is as bad as the Democrats down there. The problem is, he votes far too often with the Democrats down there. He voted to raise taxes on your cars and trucks. He voted to expand. These are all record votes. Okay. But anyway, I'll tell you what. This is the best way to look at it. Go to the Rice University study. Mark Jones, a political scientist. He's been doing this for a long time. He doesn't take money from anybody. He just simply does this. And look and see. He uses a mathematical model to actually look for clustering to see who you vote with more often. And based on that model, out of 82 voting Republicans, he ranked 63. I don't consider that a conservative voting record. Yeah. And that's one reason I'm running. We live in a very conservative district, and I want someone not only going to vote conservatively, I want someone that's going to fight for what we believe in. Right. And that I can promise you. My top priorities, border security, property tax relief. But this is what I want to promise you. If I'm elected, I'm going down there and I'm going to fight for the legislative priorities of the Republican Party in Texas. Okay? I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff that you go to the state commission you vote on. I'm going to be fighting for those. Okay? And I'm also going to be fighting for the conservative values of this House district and the liberties that make Texas so great. But the most important thing that I want you to leave away is tonight with is that I'm going down there to work for you, not the lobbyists, not Republican leadership, and not the Austin establishment. I can promise you that.